did you find this?
Oh, wow. Craig's really loud in my new headphones.
Craig's...
He's also on time.
Craig's on time. Craig's here. I did want to say, to wrap up something that we were talking about off air, I have an app that tells me how many times I've pressed the air horn button. That was air horn press 7,188.
That is not enough.
I agree. All right, so hey, it's episode 92 of TH Fantasy. We're getting closer to episode 100, and when we do that, we'll talk to you guys about how we're gonna pivot with our beginning of the show stuff. But until then, we're here. Shane, how you doing today? Having a good Friday?
I actually hit my goal for fantasy football after 2.5 years. So I joined fantasy football to be able to talk to and get along with normal people, even though we've gone like fully into the trenches of supreme data. But like being able to talk ball with strangers has always been like, oh, I can identify with people. Where today I literally had someone from work. I did have to lie a little bit. He said the Saints were going to go to the playoffs. And I was like, sorry, bro, it's the division. It's the Falcons. But I had to get the sale. So yeah, we talked a little bit of ball. I preached the word of Chris Olave and Rashid Shaheed, and
that's so dope. So dope. Did you ever see that tweet that was like, my dad's new thing is just going up to any man under 30 and being like, you look like you ball. And it's like a great way to break the ice with any guy. And she's like, he's batting 1,000 with this. Everyone loves it.
I would imagine that. You go up to someone at the bar, it's like, dude, you look like you ball.
Yeah, I would have been like, yeah, I played a little bit, you know. Ryan. Yeah, right? Ryan, Friday night, how you feeling, bro?
Friday night, it's ladies' night.
Always.
That's right.
Always. Feeling good? Good work week?
And it's feeling right.
Excellent. No seasonal depression? New stories?
No.
We're not in Arizona this week.
Yeah, thank God. This week we have some interesting... we definitely have teams.
I do have depression, so...
All AFC show this week. This is good.
That's right.
Yeah, and we only have 3 more weeks of this, so I hope you guys have gotten some useful stuff out of here, because I sure have. I feel great. Oh yeah.
We're gonna talk some Foot Clan this week.
I'm excited. All right, Ryan, do you have a shorty to start us off?
Oh yeah, I always got a shorty.
Show me the way, baby.
So we all know William the Refrigerator Perry, right? But a lesser known guy, his brother, Michael Dean Perry, also played in the NFL.
Yep.
All right. A famous Cleveland Brown. Born in 65. He's the younger brother of the fridge. Born in South Carolina. He always loved playing football with his older brothers. He went to Aiken High School, where he predominantly played offensive and defensive line. He actually played for Clemson. And set the school record of 28 sacks.
Wow.
That's right. He tied by also defensive end Gain Adams in 2006, and then also broken by Vic Beasley in 2014.
Rest in peace to Gaines Adams.
Yep. So then he was drafted by the Cleveland Browns in 1988, made it to the Pro Bowl 6 times. Like, for someone who knows a lot about Chicago sports lore and William the Refrigerator Perry, I didn't realize that his brother was such a predominant player in the NFL as well.
That's just good genes.
Right.
It was Madden. It was one of those, like, you know how you can build like your ultimate teams and you buy your packs and you get guys in there.
Sure.
He was like one of the like legends, and I'm like, Perry, looked it up and I'm like, oh shit. How about it?
Yeah. One last thing about Perry. He was actually pretty popular in Cleveland. He's one of the more televised players. He also at one time, get this, you know you've made it in the NFL when McDonald's names a sandwich after you.
No right? way.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. All right. So the sandwich was named the MDP and was available only in the Cleveland metro area. The sandwich at the time was larger than any other sandwich McDonald's offered on the menu.
There we go. Do you know what's on it?
It was basically a double cheeseburger, but had a third patty and bacon. Hell yeah. Bacon makes everything better, and we all know it. All right.
The TH Fantasy podcast, where bacon culture never died.
I had a bacon cheeseburger today for lunch, so it's topical.
There you go.
Before COVID, I would go to Bacon Fest like every year.
Sure.
So do you know what a McGangbang is?
No, I don't know what that
is. It's a Big Mac, but instead of the bread in the middle, you put a chicken sandwich in there.
Oh, what?
That's so damn much bread.
McDonald's hacks.
Oh. All right. What else does that offer?
That's Michael Dean Perry, famous brother of the refrigerator.
I love it.
I'm going to coattail Ryan here because I have a Sac Savant as well.
Okay.
So we're going to the 96 draft. I know it's not 1996 yet, but we're going to talk about pick 16 overall, number 92, Dwayne Clemens. So Dwayne Clemens is the Southern California boy, so I got to give him some love as he's from the same county that I grew up in. He played at Berkeley. He was drafted by the Vikings in 96. So this draft is notorious for being basically the best wide receiving draft class in history. There's a laundry list of people. There's a bunch of Hall of Famers, including murderer Ray Lewis, Brian Dawkins, Jonathan Ogden, Zach Thomas, but we're going to focus on the fourth defensive end taken in 1996. So Clemens doesn't really get talked about, but that's the purpose of this exercise. So Clemens had a pretty rocky start to his career, as he only started 16 games in his four-year tenure in Minnesota, even though he would play in 58 games. So it is a tad alarming for spending that high of draft capital to get a guy who's not really going to play a lot.
Sure.
Or start a lot, sorry. His rookie year, he didn't really do much besides have a fumble return for 4 yards. Clemens would then pick up steam as the seasons progressed, where he would finish in Minnesota with the next 3 years with 72 solo tackles, 5 forced fumbles, and 18.5 sacks. So he didn't really live up to the expectations of what Minnesota expected, so that he would be signed by the Chiefs for where he'd play 4 years, racking up 11 solo tackles, 4 forced fumbles, 16.5 sacks, once again proving that he was a sack savant. And then he'd move to a different team with the Bengals, where he'd have 78 tackles, 4 forced fumbles, and 14.5 sacks. So while Clemens would never make the Pro Bowl or win a Super Bowl, he is infamous for being a sack savant in a different context. Clemens is notorious for the $7,500 fine he received against Cowboys on November 10th, 1999, where he wound up in one of the most straight rights to Flozell Adams' sack, putting him on the ground for over a minute as the behemoth of a man just put a freight train right into his nuts.
Oh,
hell yeah. Sack tap.
And Clemens argued because that Flozell basically like tackled him illegally on an interception return, so he retaliated by putting the man on the ground for a minute.
1 minute, that's it? If you get a straight right to the testicles and you're up in 1 minute, good for you, man.
Yeah. He's on rides.
So as of now, it seems like Clemens has kind of chilled out a little bit. Based on looking at his Instagram following, he owns a physical therapy business based around spinal decompression. He hangs out on the beach and he shows pictures of his dog all the time. And one of his sayings that he takes from his uncle is that the earlier detected, the easier corrected. So make sure you keep your hands up against all the sack savants.
That's right. Check your nuts for safety.
Oh, that's good. All right. Wonderful. So I've got a... Mine's less fun.
We like duality here.
This one's less fun, but it's super interesting, and nobody's like dead, so don't feel bad.
We'll take it.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about a guy named Adam Mwema. He was born in 1992, so that's how I'm getting away with including this guy. He was a running back for San Diego State University who played from 2011 to 2013. He had numbers that made him project to be like an interesting prospect at the next level. He was planned to be like a day three guy, all right, because he was at a small school, but he had a lot of productivity. He had 2 1,000-yard rushing seasons and 34 touchdowns in 3 years.
Damn.
So he shows up to the 2014 NFL Combine to work out for teams. He shows up, he does 1 day of workouts, and then he leaves. What? So, this is the hold on to your butts part. So hold on to your butts. Nobody can reach him, but he's tweeting. Per his tweets, Muayma decided to leave the combine for religious reasons because God came to him in a vision and told him if he skipped the combine, he would be drafted by the Seattle Seahawks. So he takes God's advice and leaves. Interviews that come out from around this time say that Muayma speaks to God through numbers, you know, like numerology stuff. You know, obviously that's not true, but at the same time, like, numerology is everywhere in our society. So I'm going to go ahead and say anyone who says that they talk to God through coded numbers about the future and people who fear Friday the 13th are cut from the same cloth.
Isn't that just Oppenheimer?
I don't know yet.
that's like some beautiful mind shit right there.
There you go. So nobody can get a hold of Muayma for 3 days. And when he resurfaces again, it's in an airport in Florida. He had gotten on a plane from the combine and flew from Indianapolis back to Florida where he was training for the combine and was told once again by God to wait in the airport. On the fourth day of his disappearance, he contacted a friend and was like, hey, I gotta leave this airport. Friend goes to pick him up. He's still wearing all of his combine gear, but is like in a good mood. They pray together a bunch, and after a couple days, his friend drops him back off at the airport. So let's call this what it is. It's a break from reality, and you know, we've used this word before, like he's having an episode.
Okay.
So we have to approach this from a perspective of I want to respect this guy's mental health, but the story is so wild that it actually, I think, speaks a lot about the other people involved and less about Muayma, even though he's the main character in this story.
Bunch of enablers.
Yes. And let's introduce one of those enablers. So Muayma's been posting on social media, and his posts indicate that he is following a religious figurehead named Lord Rael. All right?
Nice.
Lord Rael is more than just a prophet. Rael insists that he is actually the literal second coming of Christ.
Jesus.
Not quite, but kind of. he lived in Cook County, so in the county that Chicago's in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's got some like misdemeanor arrests in his name. But so he's a doomsday prophet. There's a YouTube video that was published on March 1st, 2014, so like the week after the combine. And I want to talk about it. It's a Lord Rael video. It's all about deciphering the numerical values for each letter in the Torah. If you follow his logic, and we're doing the finger quotes here, he found a code that said something about the date February 18th and the return of Christ. It included the words Rael. This is Ryan. Stop. This is all made up. Stop. Like you're giving too much credit.
The numbers are telling me it's real, Tony. Okay.
Well,
no, it's I feel like you're trying to convert me.
I'm seeing 420 on the wall.
Send all your money to me. So he finds a code, so something about February 18th and the return of Christ that includes the words Rael, knowledge, condition, and Adam M. All right, so like Adam Muayma. Then, so he takes the next step for us, the viewer, and says that it's not just February 18th, so that it covers the whole month.
Yeah.
That's what he says. So it's not just, yeah. So he covers the whole month, the month of the combine. And in this video, it's like a Tim and Eric video. It shows a bunch of clips of newspapers telling Moema's story. So this is all taking place 3 weeks before San Diego State's pro day, which he is confirmed to attend and work out for teams at. So you would think like, hey, maybe this guy had a bit of a thing, but let's go see him work out, whatever. Between leaving the combine and this pro day, he's been posting videos, tweets, Facebook posts about Lord Rael and following the path. In his social media posts, he says the end is near, Obama is the Antichrist, and there's a bunch of mock-ups of his soon-to-be Seattle Seahawks jersey, right? Because God told him he's going to play for the Seahawks.
Right.
So he skips his pro day, and there's an ESPN writer who's trying to get him to sit down for an interview. Muayma texts him and says, I'm watching you. You just can't see me.
What the fuck?
Remote viewing, dude.
Later on, the ESPN journalist would see an Instagram post of Muayma, from Muayma of the football field on the date of the pro day that he skipped from outside the field. So like you can see him in the picture.
Sure, sure.
So he was literally watching. This might surprise you after all this. Adam Muayma does not get drafted. He never plays football again, but he tweets. Oh boy, does he tweet.
Wow.
It's a lot of the like biblical, wild biblical stuff that you'll see. Like, he also retweets Candace Owens a lot. A lot.
That doesn't surprise me.
His name on Twitter and LinkedIn is Cardinal Muwema of Africa.
Yes.
And he's still, let me tell you, man, he's ride or die for Lord Rael. He's still all about Lord Rael, who is still alive and kicking. He's still the second coming of the Savior. And occasionally, he'll drop some like 15-minute bangers on YouTube about how the world's going to end because you think he's a false prophet. For more on the beliefs of Lord Rael, Last Podcast on the Left has an episode about him. So if you like that show, it's worth finding. I listened to it. It's pretty funny. So that's essentially the story of Adam Muwema. He's still going. Journalists have reported that he suffered some severe head trauma as a teenager after being hit by a bat while trying to break up a fight at a party.
Man, that's sad.
And so to end this, like, I just want to say that I don't want to assume that any of this is a product of that. I'm not going to speculate or assume. I'm just here to tell the story of Adam Muwema. And as long as he's happy, healthy, and safe, good on you, man. You can follow your weird doomsday prophet all you want. But I do wonder, and I'll leave you with this, I wonder what Adam Muwema thinks about the Barbie movie.
Ooh, there's some code in there.
Well, he retweets a lot of like far right, like Ben Shapiro and
Seems like he'd be down with Q.
Yeah, he's totally a QAnon type dude. But hey, man, like as long as you're not literally storming the Capitol, if you believe something that doesn't harm people, and you don't express it to people, what's this dude's following of Lord Rael really hurting? You know what I mean? So that's Adam Muwema, and that sounds like that's our 92s.
All right, really quick, let's talk about a linebacker who has connections with Green Bay and the Bears. He's more of a famous Bear, though. Played with one of the best linebacker units in Bears history, I believe.
Can I guess?
Yeah, go ahead.
Are you going to do Hunter Hillenmeyer?
Hell yeah.
Oh, Hunter Hillenmeyer.
Let's talk a little bit about Hunter Hillenmeyer. He was actually drafted by Green Bay, never played a single game, and was cut the same year he was drafted, and the Bears picked him up. He grew up in Nashville, played linebacker, defensive end, tight end, punter for his high school state championship team. He went to Vanderbilt for college, 4-year letter winner. He played 45 games. 249 tackles, 6.5 sacks, nothing to really write home about, but was all-SEC first-team academic All-American while leading the nation in tackles per game, 14.
There you go.
So the Bears signed him after being cut by Green Bay at the end of the 2003 preseason. He spent most of the 2003 playing special teams for the Bears. He did tie for fifth on Chicago with 12 special teams tackle as a rookie, playing in 13 games on special teams. He became a starter at strong side linebacker in 2004, starting 11 of those games while appearing in all 16 for 90 tackles and 2.5 sacks. His number just kept going up. So in 2006, the Bears inked him to a 5-year, $13 million contract extension that went through 2010 and included a $5 million signing bonus. Yeah, that season he started 13 games against strong side linebacker, finishing with 68 tackles, a fumble recovery, and a career high 3 PBUs. What are PBUs?
Pass breakups.
Blocked or pass breakups?
Yeah. That'd be sick if he had 3 punt blocks, though.
In 2008, he played 13 games starting 6 alongside all-pro linebackers Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs.
Why do you think he got so many fucking tackles? Who are you going to run at? You going to run at Lance Briggs, Brian Urlacher, or Hunter Hillenmeyer?
Right. The Bears that year were thought to have one of the best linebacking core in the league, and the Chicago Sun-Times, because it's the Chicago Sun-Times, called Hillenmeyer underrated in announcing the defensive starters for a 2006 Monday Night Football game against the St. Louis Rams. Bears teammate Alex Brown nicknamed the linebacker Triple H Hunter Hillenmeyer. Hillenmeyer replaced Brian Urlacher at middle linebacker for the Bears after Urlacher's season-ending wrist injury of the 2009 season, making 90 tackles for 2.5 sacks, 1 interception, and forcing 4 fumbles. In 2010, he was placed on injured reserve after sustaining a severe concussion in the team's season opener against Detroit. After the season, he was released by the Bears, and he retired. The last thing I want to say about Hunter Hillenmeyer is he founded a company called Overdog. It allows fans to compete against pro athletes in video games and mobile apps.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know through what games. I'm guessing Madden or something, but...
Did that come out before or after Underdog?
This was 2013, so probably way before.
Yeah, dude. BlackRock fucking it up again.
But a famous 92 who got to play with Brian Urlacher and Lance Briggs.
The thing about Hunter Hillenmeyer that I want to say, he had a good career. He was a Bear for a long time. The Super Bowl that the Bears lost, somebody whispered at some point to Peyton Manning at halftime, "Hey, throw at the white guy." and like, Shane, we've talked about this. Like, that Super Bowl was so brutal to watch because it was just death by a thousand cuts in the second half as Peyton Manning just threw 7-yard dump offs the entire time and just beat the cover two.
That sucks.
They consistently threw at Hunter Hillenmeyer and asked their running back to break the first tackle. And he did. Like, you're not going to have a tackle rate of 100%. This is not a thing.
Yeah.
So, right. Hunter Hillenmeyer got a lot of flack for, like, not stepping up in that role, but really problem was the Bears ran one fucking defense every time, and Peyton Manning's like, I can just do this.
Yeah, when you're going against Mega Mind, who's a Hall of Famer, right? Like, there's not much you can do.
Yeah, that man's got a fucking noggin on him.
Right.
All right. So
Hunter Hillenmeyer, the ruiner of the Bears Super Bowl in 2006.
Hunter Hillenmeyer. And I am going to say that before we go, we've got a song, like 30 seconds of a song that we're going to play from my homie Alex Wiley Coyote. It's called "I'm Gonna Kill You." It's dedicated to the person that just decided to start sending me a bunch of weird threatening messages over the week because they were mad about Najee Harris. Sounds like a personal problem, but the song slaps, and listen to Alex Wiley Coyote. And commercial.
I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna find you on the internet and kill you. I'm gonna come into your house and kill you. I'm gonna kill you cause it's what I wanna do. I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna hit you with my car and kill you. I'm gonna travel real far to kill you. Yeah, no one knows just what I'm gonna do.
We're going to do Tennessee first. I don't know what to expect here. I had everything written personally and taken care of, and then they signed DeAndre Hopkins. So, Shay, why don't you go ahead and drop the bomb on us?
They used to be the Oilers a long, long time ago when they played in the Houston Astrodome. They've gone from being spoilers to starting 6-0 since they moved to Tennessee to call it home. Had a Music City miracle to conquer Buffalo, and they came within a yard of winning in the Super Bowl.
That's the joke. What a joke.
Right off the rip, it ain't good.
Sure.
So there's this running joke in my apartment whenever I get the rare chance to watch football together with all my roommates, that a running back running up the middle is pointless as they just run into a wall and it infuriates my roommate beyond belief. Before I used to be like, no, you don't get it. There's an art, there's a finesse, there's a whole bunch that happens within these seconds that you're not really seeing. Check out this Yeti of a human being doing it. And then I realized she was right after watching the Titans this year, because that was the entire offense last year of LOL, give it to Henry up the middle, which was a detriment to the team thanks to Todd Downing. So enjoy New York, you goof.
Yeah.
I do want to add context to this, though, because as I'm going to talk about, there is a lot of context that comes with data and how we kind of interpret it. Last year, the receiving room was Robert Woods, Nick Westbrook, Akine, a not ready, hurt Treylon Burks, and Chig Onwuchu. So you kind of got to lean on your best weapon and pray for the best. But you also have to mix it up in the offensive scheme. Otherwise, defenses are just going to shit all over you all the time. And that's kind of what happened last year against the Titans.
Yeah.
Because last year, the defenses stacked the box against Henry as they knew they had nothing to fear but the king himself. So the Titans ran the ball 72% of the time on first down. In the first quarter, boxes had 7+ people 90% of the time. The first play in the first quarter, seven players on the box 93% of the time. They're running the ball the first down with the one score lead with seven players on the defensive line 83% of the time. So on and so forth. So basically, any time that the Titans ran the ball on first down, which was a majority of the time, the boxes had seven players just lining up to block Derrick Henry, just sell out.
Yeah.
And the Titans ran at the fifth highest rate last year.
That's so stupid.
Wow.
I mean, maybe they just had Derrick Henry on all their fantasy teams, right?
It's you're just slamming into a wall over and over again. And yeah. I get it, but like, it's not efficient at all.
No. Well, that's like why when people are like, oh, his efficiency metrics are down. It's like, well, clearly there's context to that, right? Like, his yards per carry sucks ass because he had to run into seven dudes on every play.
And like, how is your EPA as a metric going to be good if 90% of your carries are running directly into a brick fucking wall?
Correct. So the Titans ranked 29th overall with average distance to go on second down. This sort of disparity puts a team behind and forces offensive inconsistencies as they have to either force plays with more yardage to try to chunk up and hope the efficiency break through 7+ defenders to get those 7.4+ yards. So it snowballs, and if the Titans ran the ball on first down, they converted 60% of the time, which is 31st in the league. When the Titans had the lead, they choked, plain and simple. They gave up 54 points in the fourth quarter, which is dead last in the NFL. The only team to do that worse was the 2006 Raiders.
Oh.
So we like watched history last year happen with this culmination of the collapse of the Titans.
Wow.
So the Titans had the sixth best positive point margin in the first half, but in the second half, they went 3 and out 48% of the time, only followed by the Bears at 41%, who had picked number one overall in the league.
Yep.
So you might be asking, was there good? Are there caveats? Yeah, there's both, obviously, like everything that we talk about throughout this entire culmination of analysis. So as we know, the Titans are just like the Niners in the fact they're cursed to hell with injuries. Everything fell apart. The game is determined. The game that determined if they made the playoffs had a third-string quarterback, a backup tackle, a backup center, a backup guard, and they only lost because Josh Dobbs fumbled the ball and the Jaguars returned it for a touchdown, which blew the game for them. I mean, obviously, they get bounced in the next round, but
and
we would have won that game. Let's go Chargers.
There you go.
So I do want to kind of – we're going to talk about Ryan Tannehill and the passing game numbers here, but I do want to give – some context to this data of like EPA or expected points added per attempt, because I do think this data is kind of contextually inflated because they ran the ball so much that seeing this jump in expected points after pass attempts happen is because when you're running the ball 73% of the time, when you do throw the ball, defenses are like, what the hell are they doing? This is not expected. Like there's no, this is not in the plan, right? So I think if they mixed up the throws to say 60% run attack, that the expected points would go down to a more middle ground, level ground of more league average compared to like what we're going to see here of success rates and rankings within the NFL.
Sure.
So in play action, the Titans had 51% on a 51% success on dropbacks, 12th in the NFL, and a 12.2 yards per attempt, number one in the NFL. When they were in general passing the ball, they ranked 8th in expected points per attempt and 10th in yards per attempt. If they threw a first down pass, which was not the norm for them, the probability that they recorded another first down was 5th best in the NFL. So you're obviously skipping plays, you're skipping downs, you're allowing the field to get chunked up, and you can open up the offense a little bit more. So even with Malik Willis and Josh Dobbs, first down passes produced the 3rd best expected points per attempt and 2nd highest yards per attempt in the league. Which is kind of shocking compared when you can look at the context of that team and who's throwing the ball and everything.
Right, right.
So I get it. The wide receiving room was abysmal. The team was hurt. Tannehill is regressing. But, like, I have no clue what that offensive scheme and offensive coordinator were doing. Like, they clearly were out of their depth in understanding analytics. And it doesn't take anybody. Like, you could take a 15-year-old the street off of Madden and be like, hey, what do we do here? Like, maybe pass the ball once or twice.
Yeah.
So that's kind of all I'm going to, like, really beat the dead horse and throw a grenade on it. But we're going to try to look to extract the value of this team and what we can maybe look forward to with the Titans this year.
Okay.
So the Titans shed a shit ton of talent this year. They lost 23 players. One of which I would say is quote unquote fantasy relevant. And that is Robert Woods, who is now a Texan, who actually had the leading targets on that team, which blew my mind.
Yuck.
They did beef up their offensive line through free agency in the draft by getting highly touted prospect Peter Skoronski to pad the left side.
There we go.
They added to the trench, is taken care of through him, and the acquisition of Andre Dillard, which bodes well for Derrick Henry to, again, rush up the middle at all costs. Even though Derrick Henry had most of his rushes come from the right side, so I don't know really what that game plan is going to do. Maybe that was the weak side for pass protection. I don't know. I didn't get that deep in the trenches. So the Titans also traded up to draft General Cornball Will Levis in one of the funniest draft nights in a while.
Yes.
In the first round, if you're a hater like me.
You call him General Cornball?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. I love it.
He's fucking weird. You know, I mean, Will Levis is a psyop, I'm telling you. They also kind of reached for a running back in the third round by drafting Tajay Spears in a really weird, like, personnel move, because he's not really the same style of runner that they have there, and they don't really check the ball down a whole hell of a lot to utilize his skill set.
And running backs need ACLs, right?
Correct, and he has nothing in his knee.
Okay, all right, cool.
They drafted Josh Wiley at tight end. I don't think we even scouted him.
No.
He's probably going to block. No. He's going to play the Anthony Fursker role compared
to
Jake.
That's Ryan's boy.
Yep. He'll get a week 12 touchdown.
Yeah. He'll definitely get a Ryan shitty touchdown of the week at one point this season. And 7th rounder wide receiver Colton Dowell.
Okay.
So he doesn't matter. So it's pretty obvious that the psyop of Will Levis as the heir apparent to the starting quarterback as Tannehill can be cut next year for basically $4 million. That'll happen next year unless Tannehill has another career year. He actually might take over by the bye week, because their first 6 weeks is a doozy. We'll do the at the end of my segment.
Sure.
We'll do the breakdown of the
wins, losses,
schedule.
Sure.
Yeah. So as much as we clown on Arthur Smith for not getting us fantasy points, he does know how to utilize his offense to their ceiling, and this is what Tennessee needs to do to get Tannehill back into form as well as set up Levis to be successful. So while Tannehill has regressed on his rushing attempts and designed runs, he still has the ability to be a rushing quarterback and use in a playoffs play-action style offense.
Didn't he have a ridiculous amount of touchdowns?
Dude, okay, since signing with Tennessee, his rushing touchdowns were 4, 7, 7, and then 2 last year.
So it wasn't last year, it was the year before, okay.
Yeah.
But he's rushed for almost 20 touchdowns.
Yeah.
21, exactly.
20 and 21 were good years for Ryan Tannehill. Or I don't want to say good, but they were above ceiling.
Yeah.
And you think that's just basically a product of, you know, everyone thinking they're going to give the ball to Derrick Henry and then he just sneaks it?
Yeah.
Well, so there's this guy. He plays for Philly now, but he used to play in Tennessee as a wide receiver. He makes your job a lot easier back there.
Remember when that trade happened? Everyone was so upset. Nowadays, dude, I wake up and I'm so grateful that AJ Brown is on the Eagles. Like,
Shout out.
He got freed. He can just run rampant and do what he needs to do.
Yep.
So I am going to kind of count last year's Tannehill as a wash, as he did have two different injuries in his ankle that limited him across two different times. And he only played in 12 games, which isn't great. But he's obviously getting older. He's kind of getting phased out. So my expectations aren't high, but we're going to kind of use that data point from last year as like, it might not be the worst, or might not be his worst. I'm not phrasing that right. It just ignore last year.
No, I get it. I'm following you, man. Let's go.
So he was pretty mid across all his metrics. Nothing terrible, but also nothing game breaking, which people expected in 2020-21, just based on his career years with AJ Brown and being able to rush for 7 touchdowns and 500 yards. So the one bright side about this is that his pressured statistics are very good for a guy who gets slept on. He is 4th in pressured completion rate percentage, 4th in pressure accuracy, 9th in red zone accuracy. So if he's not vulturing touchdowns from Derrick Henry, he does provide the type of accuracy you want to see when they get to the end zone.
Yeah. And that offensive line is going to give him plenty of opportunities to throw under pressure.
Because even though they did buff it up, they're still ranked like 31st or 30th.
Yep.
So there is a varied sample size last year due to injury, like I was talking about. So if we do average out Tannehill's tenure in Tennessee, he throws about 28 times per year. You can round up to 29 if you'd like, which puts him around 487 attempts for the year. And even with an average yards per attempt of 8 and his completion percentage of 69.5, that puts him around 2,800 yards, which is pretty fucking gross for fantasy.
Yeah, that's bad.
I will say that we should anticipate an increase in passing volume as they did acquire DeAndre Hopkins and Treylon Burks is in year 2. So if we bump that number up to, say, 31 attempts per year, which is my ceiling for him of expected outcomes, it puts him still at 2,900 yards, which is still icky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
He's going to need they're going to need to dramatically throw more to make him a viable fantasy option.
Correct. Tannehill also averages 3 rushes per game, and if you extrapolate his attempts and averages for a year, he is around 233 rushing yards and around 5 touchdown opportunities per year.
Okay.
It's not bad. Not bad. So, not a great, as a summary, I don't think Tannehill can be a QB2 to me, even with optimism, because there's the looming threat of Will Levis, a regression in passing upscale. So Tannehill is QB28 between Sam Howell and Desmond Ridder, and I think that's the perfect spot for him, and I will do anything to not have to touch that section of the board. I will say, though, as much as we clown on Will Levis, I do think he's a real potential sleeper here, because if we project him to start by the bye, he's free, and we probably will see a lower attempts of passes and more utilization of his legs to acclimate him to the speed of the NFL and utilize a simpler style of offense for him, where that sucks for the NFL, but for fantasy purposes, that's great. Where if we can get 5 to 6 attempts per game out of him, that's something that's not really to laugh at, right? Even if it's 50 yards.
Right. By the way, you said he's between Ridder and Howell.
Yeah.
I'm taking him over both.
Tannehill?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, like, he has D-Hop, right? Like, there's options there, and, like, they're as much as we think they're going to be shitty, they're still going to try to play to make the playoffs. Like,
yeah.
They're going to try to punch above their ceiling. It just depends when the wheels fall off.
Yeah.
Yeah, the AFC South, I mean, they're really only going to have to contend with the Jags.
Yeah. Those those Houston games are going to be pretty sick.
Yeah.
So they signed D-Hop. I get it. I get that he's been wide receiver 9, 5, 4, 3, and 2 in the last 5 out of 6 years. I get it, but I think that pumping the brakes a little bit on this acquisition will kind of help us actually win fantasy matchups instead of trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. Now, I know D-Hop's most ran route last year is also Tannehill's most targeted route. So people are saying that D-Hop should play the slot, but I don't know what games they're watching because he only plays out of the slot 26% of the time. He runs the curl and the slant at the highest percentage. Tannehill doesn't chuck it, so I think there's going to be a good amount of targeted routes for D-Hop with those things. So with the departure of Robert Woods and Austin Hooper, 151 targets are vacated. So now not all of those are going to go to D-Hop, but I think calling a ceiling of around 110 targets for around 80 catches is what AJ Brown did in Tennessee, and I think that's really realistic for Hopkins this year.
Sure.
And if we take the last 2 years on average, that puts Hopkins at around 900 yards, which isn't exciting, but he's good. If he's getting 7 yards a game, 14 points a game isn't really out of the realm of possibility. And it's not game-breaking to me, but it's solid as a wide receiver too, or a flex.
It's solid for a Tennessee wide receiver, 900 yards. You know?
Yeah. I mean, Brandon Tannehill's career year, he did support A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, and Jonnu Smith. So, does have a potential ceiling, but it's going to take a lot for us to get there. And luckily, they do have a new offensive coordinator, Tim Kelly, but he also was promoted from inside, and that kind of makes me a little bit apprehensive if he learned from Todd Downing.
Well, he also, this guy, sorry, Ryan, this guy was an offensive coordinator in Houston when Hopkins was there.
Okay. That puts him even higher up to maybe 120 targets, right? Because they're going to utilize, they know how he plays the game.
Is this guy going to be calling the plays, or is Vrabel still?
It's Vrabel.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Warren Sharp said, is he kind of ragged on Vrabel for being like, he's a really good coach, but he plays way too conservatively.
Yeah.
Because he's always had Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
I have for Tanny. I had 493 attempts over 17 games, breaking out his averages, and I have him going 20 of 29 every week if it's averaged out.
Yeah.
And so that, to me, I broke down 7 to 8 catches, not attempt, but catches for Hopkins, 4 to 5 for Burks, 2 to 3 to Chig, and 4 to Whomstever.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I hope that ADOT bumps up. Please, God.
Yeah, it kind of has to. So back to Hopkins, he is wide receiver 24 right now between Scary Terry and Mike Williams. So, Calvin Ridley, DeAndre Hopkins, or Jerry Jeudy?
Ridley, Hopkins, or Jeudy?
It's Ridley. It's Ridley. Give me the better offense.
For me, I'm going to go Hopkins because I think Christian Kirk is going to be the number one.
My guy.
Dude, Ryan has psyoped me. I want Christian Kirk everywhere this year. I know we'll cover that on this episode. I know we'll get to it, but yeah, I'm on board with that take.
We'll do a separate Jags episode just for Christian Kirk.
That'll just be the 100 episode. Yeah. So we're talking about Jags for an hour.
Yeah.
All right. So now to our child, Treylon Burks. I'm not going to make excuses. I'm not going to talk about how he had asthma during camp, how he missed most of it. I'm not going to talk about the fact that he was essentially learning in a whole new position. I'm not going to talk about how he was hurt. I'm not going to talk about how he had concussion and was out. I love Treylon Burks. So he did show flashes last year when it mattered to keep the hope alive. And honestly, I really hope that Tim Kelly understands that Burks thrives in the slot and D-Hop plays the outside, so both can feast. Otherwise, Burks is cooked this year and I'm going to legitimately cry. So he's still raw as a prospect when it comes to separation, adding layers to his game, but I'm going to treat this as his rookie year and kind of go from there. So in Tannehill's best career year, his wide receiver 2 had 92 targets behind A.J. Brown's 110. So there is a realm of possibility in which the ceiling numbers I provided can yield Burks with around 90 targets this year, and I'll be ecstatic with that to see his first development.
Yep.
With last year's regression of passing volume, 90 targets still is feasible, as you can reduce the tight end targets as Austin Hooper is gone, and Westbrook Akine I really don't care about. Fantasy wise, we're gonna have to see how it plans out, because when you put those numbers, Corey Davis was still wide receiver 30,
which is
above Burks's ADP of 41, but that's still wide receiver 3 or 4 numbers, and that's not good for fantasy.
Right.
Correct.
So he's between Kadarius Toney and Quentin Johnston. So Jahan Dotson, Hollywood Brown, or Treylon Burks?
Hollywood.
Dotson, Brown, or Burks.
I like all three.
This is tough because
I try to take the Tony approach of, instead of just going, oh, here's ADP, it's like, no, let me see which guys you like and make you pick your favorite child.
Yep.
I think I might go Dotson just because
my guy.
He's gonna have a breakout year, I think.
I love it.
Whether it's a McLaurin injury or something, it's gonna be good. He showed some flashes last year. I like Dotson.
I have faith in Burks. I mean, his ADOT's 12.4 yards. I love that. He averaged 5 yards after the catch. We all watched that Green Bay game where he was just abusing the DBs.
Yeah.
Like, if he gets 6 targets a game, we're flirting, you know, with 100 targets. Yeah. And with that ADOT, like, I don't know. I'm just grasping at straws. Like, come on, man. It's still good. It's still good.
I want to be pragmatic about this and be as analytical as I can. Yes, fantasy is about getting your guys, right? But at the same time, we're trying to win. And I can have my guys in other leagues, but like for the data I'm trying to present you right now for redraft, it sucks to shoot your kid, right? It's that Wesley Snipes image of him crying with the gun. It's like,
yep,
I got to do what hurts me most, but it's the right thing to do. Yep. And speaking of that, I know you love Kyle Phillips, but I'm going to skip over the rest here and move on to Chig, unless you have things to talk about Kyle Phillips.
Here's the thing. You said we're talking about shooting our children, and like, I have so much Kyle Phillips exposure because his tape was fucking sick. And week one of last year, he fucking crushed it, by the way. In week one, before he got hurt, he ran only 17 routes, but was targeted on 9 of those and went 6 catches for 66 yards. Kyle Phillips can be that dude. But if you tell me that the Titans all of a sudden wake up and say, like, hey, we're putting Treylon Burks in the slot, you can have all my Kyle Phillips shares. You can have them all. Like, give me Burks in the slot. I don't fucking care.
And it's like, are they really going to run 3 wide receiver sets?
No.
So, yeah. But D-Hop's on a 2-year contract. It could be 1 year, 31 years old.
Sure.
This is kind of where wide receivers go to die. So,
sure.
Sorry.
All right. Chig me up, baby.
We're going to Chig. So with Austin Hooper being gone, 60 targets are now vacated. He was the number 2 target on that offense last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He blew my mind when I saw that value.
The latter half of that season, he was just a consistent play in DFS.
Yep.
So Chig is now the de facto tight end 1 on the offense. So I'm not going to sit here and say Chig is going to get all 106 targets from both his targets last year and Austin Hooper's.
Well, I'll say that he will.
There you go. The hot takes, yes. But the fact that he is rated poorly as a pass blocker should lead him to be used more as a receiver than a blocker. I mean, we do want to see blocking ability, make sure they stay on the field, but if they can chip and they can run routes, that's kind of all we need.
Right.
Do you have, Shane, do you have his ADOT from last year?
It was like ridiculous.
Yeah, I think
it was number 1.
It's over 8 yards, which is great for a tight end.
Yeah. There was just so many big plays that he was involved in.
Oh, it was 7.9.
Oh, okay.
His target rate was really high. That's what it was. He was number 2 at the position.
Sure.
And yards per route run is also a thing, but he also ran lower routes, so it was higher percentages. So
he came on near the end of the year.
He did. And which is weird because I wanted to look and see if like Burks's time out of the game impacted his increase in targets. And while it kind of did in the latter half of the season, he played a majority of his snaps from the inside and the slot, where Burks only ran out of the slot at the highest of 28% last season, which is criminal. Yeah. But there is a little bit of correlation because Chig did see an uptick in an average of 2 targets per game when Burks was gone between 13 and 15. He left week 13 early after 1 target for a touchdown that got dropped because he got a concussion.
Yep.
So conservatively, based on previous years in Tennessee, tight ends are targeted 26% of the time for the target share at the position. So I think I'm not going to like take you down from your number, Ryan, but I think that 90 targets is possible if everything does go right for Chig.
Oh yeah. I just like to be bold. That's all.
No, yeah, I get it. I mean, we want to play for ceiling here. As Chig also had an 88% snap share as a receiver, so I think 70 targets is something that I'd be comfortable projecting with D-Hop in town and a middle-of-the-pack passing attack. So it sounds like a lot, but it's really only 4.5 targets a game, and I think that gets Chig around 700 yards if we follow the type of math in a vacuum with everything going perfectly.
Yeah, for sure.
I have a question then. I'm sorry to
No, you're fine. No, call me up. Let's help me get better.
So this is pre-D-Hop. But I think we need to, I want to establish this as like what we would consider his ceiling would have been before D-Hop signed, right? So he was tight end 14 on 4-for-4 before the D-Hop signing. And last year's tight end 14 in total points was Dawson Knox. Dawson Knox went 48 catches on 65 targets for 517 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Yeah, Dawson Knox became a ghost last year. It was almost embarrassing.
But my question is to you, does Chig do better than that?
No, I think that's right around where he falls.
48 of 65, 517 yards. Six
I mean, maybe like...
I think he does better than it. Maybe like 60 of 80, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of... But, it's not by much.
But he's not scoring 6 tutties.
Oh, you wait.
So as of right now, Chig is tight end 12 on 4-for-4 between Dulcich and Kincaid. So we're going to do two here because I know we like our tight ends. So... Dulcich, Chig, or Kincaid?
Dulcich.
Yeah, I'll agree with Tony. I'm all in on a Russell Wilson emergence here. I mean, it's not going to be like when he was playing in Seattle, but it's going to be hell of a lot better than how he played last year.
Yeah, you can't get worse.
Yeah.
All right, so the next one is Freiermuth, Chig, or Dalton Schultz?
Ooh. Muth, Chig, or Schultz? I think I'm going to go Muth on this one.
Same.
I mean, the only reason I brought this up is because they have a big differentiation in ADP. So, like, you're getting Muth in, like, round 8, and you're getting Chig and Schultz in, like, round 12 to 14. So it's kind of a team structure build. But, I mean, based on the way Tony broke it down, like, Muth can finish top 5, top 6. Just based on targets.
I would think so.
He's going to be boring. If you're one of those people that plays in a redraft league that's got a tight end premium, like, I get that the big guys, people are going to reach on the big guys. Like, great, good for you. I'd love to, if I get Muth in the 8th, that's fine. You can spend your 3rd and 4th on Kittle and Hockenson if you want. Like, I'll take the discount. Yeah.
Ironically enough, though, I am in a 2 tight end, 1.75 tight end premium league, and George Kittle and Pat Freiermuth are my tight ends.
That's sick.
So it's very boring, but it's like, hey, break the game and give me the floor. I need the middle ground here.
All right. So, Chig.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not excited, but it is what it is. All right. Now on to the meat of this episode and the king himself. Derrick Henry is a player I will ride until I see his name on Twitter saying he's retired. I will no longer doubt Derrick Henry. Yeah, he's 30. Yeah. He has substantial wear and tear. And yes, his efficiency metrics aren't what they used to be. But either side of the coin, he is getting cheaper.
Yes.
So his yards per carry, yards before and after contact have regressed. But when you have an injury-depleted piss-poor O-line against 77-plus defenders on defensive line, on 95% of your rushes, your numbers aren't going to look great. So all this data has context, right? So you kind of need to look at everything through a different type of lens, as opposed to this is the ranking of EPA, this is the ranking that he finished 35th in efficiency metrics. We kind of need to break it down in a different manner to understand why those numbers look shitty. Because Derrick Henry still had 1,500 yards last year.
Derrick Henry fucking rules. Like, so, you're talking about the injury, and my favorite thing about that injury is, first off, he was going to lead the NFL in everything that year. Because he was leading the NFL and everything that year. And then he breaks bones in his foot, comes back in time for the playoff game, and they give him 20 carries.
And he still did well.
Yeah.
He's not human.
No.
So I am putting faith in Tim Kelly to understand the fact that you do have to give defenses a little bit of variety. And I think that will open up rushing lanes for Derrick Henry, because defenses are going to have to choose to either sell out for Henry or sell out for D-Hop. And you can't pick both. And it's just going to, they have to basically put in the mentality to be like, all right, this is what we need to lean into and utilize the weapons that we have. So like I said, Derrick Henry put up 1,500 yards on a quote unquote down year. And for someone who doesn't quote unquote catch balls, he had a career year in targets last year and catches for almost 400 receiving yards with a 12.1 yards per reception.
Wow.
I actually have some Derrick Henry receiving stuff if you'll abide me.
Yes, talk your shit.
his longest catch of the year was like a 70-yard screen pass. So he went 15 catches for 242 yards on through the air. That's wild. So if you take away the long of 69 yards, it's still 14 catches for 173 yards. He averaged over 12 yards after the catch per reception.
Yeah, and like if you think about it, if you get this man in open space starting up the freight train, he's just going to go.
Yeah.
When you have seven people in front of you and you run at the rate that Derrick Henry does, you can't stop him.
What was that stiff arm that he had on
Josh Norman?
Yes.
That's what got me into football, dude. I watched him bag it all human being and I was like, this dude kicks ass.
Was that on a screen?
No, that was an out no. pitch out.
No, yeah.
The thing about Derrick Henry that I think is most impressive is that he's managed to do all this while running into a brick wall over and over and over and over again. Like,
can you imagine if the Eagles traded him?
And furthermore, to take that even a step further, there is no running back in the NFL right now that would be as consistently successful for as long as a time as Derrick Henry has, playing that style of, we're going to ram into you as hard as possible.
No.
CMC couldn't do it. Saquon Barkley couldn't do it. You need space for these guys to operate. Derrick Henry's just like, nope, I'm good.
And that's why I think he's a true unicorn. I think he's one of the very few NFL players that we've seen that, like you said, he can take a beating. He has 1,750 attempts on his NFL career, and he's still going at 30 years old. So I do really believe that the addition of Todd Downing, padding the offensive line, year two Burks, and the addition of D-Hop will have Derrick Henry benefit the most out of this offense. I'm going to be sad when he retires because he's one of my favorite players and he did get me into football. So I love to clap for this man every year. So I still want to pencil in Henry for 330 attempts and 40 targets this year.
Really quick,
Shane, you said how many rushing attempts does he have in his career?
1,750.
All right. So he's good. But if we look at the records, Emmitt Smith has 4,400.
Jesus.
Well, you're never gonna break like greatness, right? And, like,
he should get. He's one of the greatest running backs of at least our generation.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Walter Payton had over 3,800. Frank Gore over 3,700. This guy's got a lot,
like, for like 10 years.
Yeah, well, this guy's got a lot of work to do.
Well, because like this is before my time, but like on average, like off the top of your head, like how many yards a year did those guys put up?
I mean, 1,300, 1,400 yards.
Okay. So as of right now, per 4 for 4, I sent this to Tony and I said, this is disgusting. Henry is running back 8 between Pollard and Ramondre at pick 208.
That's ridiculous. Between Pollard and Ramondre?
So people are drafting Patrick Mahomes, Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, and Chris Olave before Derrick Henry.
No.
That's just ridiculous.
I get it. Best ball tournament ADP is a lot different than normal ADP, but the fact that he can hit the mid-second blows my fucking mind that I can get AJ Brown and Derrick Henry on the same team this year.
Yes. Yeah.
So between these three, Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry, Austin Eckler.
Derrick Henry.
And
it's not even close.
No, it's not.
Like, I'm thinking, you know, CMC is in a tier of his own, but that second tier is Chubb, Bijan, Henry. That's it.
Yeah.
And Saquon, depending on my day, Saquon's in that tier. Sure. But then, like I need one running back from those two tiers if I'm going to play hero RB.
I think Saquon to me is like, it for me, it's CMC, Saquon, and then those three, right? That's kind of how I view that tier of...
Sure.
I mean, maybe it's Henry and Chubb in their own tier, and then Bijan and Saquon in their own tier. But I'm also like super high on Bijan this year.
Me too.
So I'm not worried about Hassan Haskins. They play the same style, but he's nowhere as good as Derrick Henry. And Tannehill doesn't check the ball enough down to really validate me saying pick Tajay Spears.
Haskins is going to be facing suspension for being a horrible piece of shit off the field.
Did he do something terrible?
Yeah, he got arrested for domestic assault, I believe. Oh, great.
Cut him. Fuck him.
Yep. I mean, they drafted Tajay Spears, so...
I guess I missed that news piece.
Damn, maybe so, that's the next player I'll take in Golf League. It'll be the Tajay Spears.
And especially if Will Levis joins the fray, no one's checking the ball down with the guy who's going to run the ball five or six times a game. So in summation for the Titans, don't draft Ryan Tannehill. Will Levis might have some form of relevancy as a mobile quarterback later in the season. D-Hop is a fine wide receiver too. Burks I'm scared shitless for because this is kind of the make or break year. Chigum whatever on, but I'm also skeptical just based on a lower passing volume and he's not hyper athletic. But buy the dip on Derrick Henry.
Yeah, hell yeah. Oh yeah,
Derrick Henry. And like you said too with Chig, like he's going to be someone where if you're struggling in those later rounds and you haven't picked up a tight end yet, take him.
Yeah.
10, 11, 12, maybe not 10. 11, yeah. 12, 13.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go through their schedule real quick. They're in New Orleans.
Ooh, that's it.
I think that's a New Orleans win.
It's so weird because, like, the outer conference week one is always crazy.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to redact that statement. I'm going to go with Tennessee just because New Orleans has got a whole bunch of new shit going on. It's week one. They might not have it all together yet, and Henry just might run all over them.
I like that. Give me Tennessee. I'm there, too.
Next game, Chargers come to them.
Loss.
Yeah, that's a loss.
They go to Cleveland.
That'll be a loss. Close one. Yeah, I'll call it a loss.
But remember, I mean, Tennessee still has a fucking awesome defense.
Yeah.
You could argue they have the best defense in the league. Like, that Saints game, give me the under right now on total points.
Yeah, right.
12-3. That's going to be the final score.
Right.
All right.
It's going to be, like, low 30s, maybe.
For sure. Yeah. All right. Then the Bengals come to them.
Loss.
That's a loss.
Okay. Then they go to Indianapolis.
That's a win.
It's a win, yeah.
Then they play the Ravens in Tennessee.
That'll be tough. Yeah, loss number four.
Okay, that's like kind of the roughest part of their schedule. But they have their bye week after that. Then the Falcons come to them.
It's a win.
Okay, yeah.
That's another low-scoring game.
So you had, what was the score right now? They're, what, at their bye week, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Out of those six games, what are they, 4-2? Or 2-4.
2-4.
So we might see Will Levis play that eighth game just based on how the team falls apart.
Sure.
So then they go to Pittsburgh to play the Steelers.
I think that's a win.
That's close. I'll give them one.
Then they go to Tampa Bay.
Win. Dub.
They go to Jacksonville to get their ass beat.
That's a loss.
Loss number five.
Panthers come to them.
That's a win.
Okay, Colts come to them.
Ooh, are they going to split with the Colts this year?
I don't win.
No. Yeah, you think they're going to take both?
I think they take both.
It just depends if that team can stay healthy, honestly. Yeah. That's what it is. And if Will Levis is playing, that's like, those are the two caveats. And those are huge, but all right. They go to Miami.
Loss.
It's a loss.
Okay, this is when it matters. Playoff season. Texans.
Win.
Ooh, and that's their first game against the Texans, right? I think they're going to split with the Texans, so I'll give the first one a win.
Okay, then Seattle comes to them.
Loss.
Yeah, loss.
Next one, they go to Houston.
I was going to call a split. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Then the final game, Jacksonville comes to them.
It's another loss.
They're going 8-9 this year. The Tennessee Titans.
The line is 7.5.
Sure.
Wow.
Interesting. All right. So Tennessee, I hope we watch the Titans and they're we can remember them.
Tennessee, we barely knew ye.
Never again. I will never think of this team again. All right. So that is 92 original, and we'll come back with 92 extra spicy. Soon. So, any last thoughts about the Titans before we go?
No, I don't want to look at him again.
Just get Derrick Henry. That's it.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
That's
pray for Treylon Burks. Look into the numbers for Treylon Burks.
TLDR, Derrick Henry.
What does Lord Rael tell me?
All right. Good night, everyone.
I'm gonna kill.